This is your last chance to register for Catalyst Connect with the early bird discount. Register before March 31st to secure your spot. Hurry, spaces are limited. Register now before prices increase.
You know, a strong pharmacy, retail pharmacy is about 25% gross margin. If they're maximizing their buying, they're maximizing their inventory control, they got the right revenue piece in there with the PSAO, and they're maximizing their revenue that way, you can get to a 25% margin in a pharmacy. Okay.
And then if I'm a well-run pharmacy based on your recommended practice and stuff, what's my margin today?
So it's gross margin? Like
what's my net margin?
Net bottom line?
Yep.
So we see anywhere from 3% bottom line up to about 10% bottom line for a retail. So I've got some retails that are about 10% bottom line. That's an outlier. But most are about 3 to 6% bottom line.
Yeah.
With 3 to 4 about right there at the average. And that's a commendable bottom line. I mean, it's a respectable bottom line for a pharmacy.
Right. 3%?
3 to 4%.
3 to 4?
Yeah.
How has that been compared to maybe 5 years ago? What would have been respectable 5 years ago?
Oh, that's a good question. Maybe it was about 4 to 5 at that point.
And 10 years ago?
I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
Don't have that off the top of my head. Yep.
Okay. So that's not bad. A lot positive. I think there's a lot of positive stuff going on in pharmacy.
Yeah. It's like we get around NCPA and there's just a lot of doom and gloom chatter about
it's
everywhere. You're right, but I mean NCPA this past October seemed to be a lot of doom and gloom conversation around how this January and February is going to go, this first quarter.
So here's my theory on that. Happiness,
prepare for the worst.
Well, no, happiness and unhappiness
right
are about the rate of change, not about where you are. Okay. I always say there are guys mining coal in North Carolina who are happy, right? and the reason you're seeing that doom and gloom, because you just heard, 4 or 5 years ago, 3 or 4 today, you're on a downward slope.
Right.
That the doom and gloom is the direction, not the position, right? And so things aren't as good as they were. Things is not, so you want to change that. You have to start seeing, and even things can be in a bad 3 or 4%. And you hear people like Doug Hoey and stuff start talking positive. Like the last innovation board meeting I was in was pretty positive because things are starting to improve.
Yeah.
Legislative's very interested, the Senate and the House. The only thing they can agree on is that PBMs are bad. You know, you're starting to see some things. You're starting to see some cost plus models. I think you'll start hearing more positive talk, even though your actual position hasn't moved.
Yeah.
But there's this feeling of improvement.
Cost plus seems like a natural kind of fit. And we've heard, a few names really make some big headlines, Mark Cuban, of course, and Kyle up with Blueberry. And then, there's a handful of pharmacies that have kind of made headlines with that. Tell me a little bit practically about what that looks like. Is this actually a separate entity? Is this just a loyalty plan that you've branded within the existing pharmacy? Or, how does that actually work?
Yeah, so we ended up doing our Cost Plus Pharmacy. We set it up as a separate LLC after long. This discussion has been in the works for well over 2 years, I would say. And we didn't actually open the pharmacy until last summer. And that's because it took a lot of reporting. So we wanted to look at what was our current cash price. And we don't want to deter those patients, but we want to be able to, lot of market analysis, I would say. In addition to contracting. So Tim checked with different individuals at our PSAO. We didn't want to have a conflict with our current operation, and we wanted to be very careful. So instead of setting up a loyalty plan for a patient in our regular operation, we felt it safest to go ahead and open up a separate LLC, a separate a separate pharmacy, essentially, a separate NPI. So with that, we don't feel that that's going to throw off any of our any pricing. So any time that we're reporting, our numbers are separate over at our cost plus than what they are at our traditional community pharmacy. So we feel that it's lower risk that way. We've heard of pharmacies that have implemented it into their current workflow. And again, I think this is new territory. So nobody really knows. I think it's a decision that you just have to decide what's best for your business. We're at the point where, well, maybe if a plan wants to cancel our contract, then maybe they should cancel our contract. But, for us, it was the best way for us to kind of dip our toes in it. Because of the setup that we have that I mentioned initially, we're able to run our cost plus pharmacy out of a different suite. So we have the perfect setup to be able to run an efficient operation. And not everyone has that. So I can understand why they would want to implement it into their current operation as well. But we have a very unique staffing situation that we're able to have someone staffing that pharmacy. I feel that we have a better setup to be able to run the pharmacy this way. And I also feel that it gives us some leverage whenever we are talking to businesses in the community. This is interesting, and I'm not sure what will come of this, but one of our first patients in Cost Plus, I'll never forget, it was a vet's office shopping for insulin. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is perfect. We should talk to all the vets. So, you never know where you'll find your market. When we opened Cost Plus, we didn't think about all the pets that need their medicines that all the humans don't want to pay for the regular pharmacy. Sure. So I feel that we have some leverage there as well. So yeah, that's kind of how we've chosen to do it. And with that, I guess I didn't really touch on this a whole lot, but part of where my brain has just been rolling since we've opened up Cost Plus is how do we add services to this already to this membership model? So when we're talking about adding services, one thing I've really tried to we've already launched it. I can't launch everything at once, but we have a home-based program where we can send our community health workers out to their homes, or I could offer services at a patient's home, for example, and this could be a membership add-on. So I keep telling my team we could have add-ons for this, add-ons for that. So with our clinic, if a patient says, I've been really stressed recently, I'm not sure, I've been having low energy, can you just help me pick out what vitamins I need? Well, instead of me throwing vitamins at them and then in 6 months them getting their labs drawn and we don't really know what their baseline was, I now have the ability to offer low-cost labs in partnership with our Cost Plus Pharmacy. I now have that ability to offer low-cost labs, get actual results, and then we can use our own branded line to get the patients what they need. So I'm really focused on this idea of wellness and closing the gap in care, because I do feel like so much of my job is we just want instant gratification. Patients just want us to throw something at them because that's what they're used to and that's what they're told to do, is we'll just go by the pharmacy and have them pick out a vitamin for you. Well, that's fine, and I'm happy to do that if a patient doesn't want to pay for the labs or go through that process. But if we want actual answers instead of band-aiding a problem, let's look at what other options can we offer. And so I really just feel like we've been able to increase patient access to a lot of services. And even if they don't go through us, at least they now know that these are options that exist and they can maybe actually treat their conditions and find some answers.
This is a marriage you're making, really, with partners, right, in general. Osborne Drugs, it is. The whole group probably a little bit too has to kind of all like be able to work with each other. What do you look for when someone's approaching you, or maybe even you're approaching them, I don't know, as far as like alignment with values, with what Osborne Drugs and this group is about and relative to what they want? What are you looking for to overlap, I guess?
You know, part of it is you got to be willing to be involved in your community. So if you're involved in your community, you're going to be that you're the face of the organization. So, you know, your kids are going to school there, you're going to church there, you're involved with people. It creates a personal touch in pharmacy that is even more rare today than it's ever been. And then so it allows them to do it. You need an entrepreneurial spirit. Okay. That spirit is one of my concerns about pharmacy as a career today is so many of our pharmacists are time clock punchers. And I mean, they're so worried about, well, I'm clocking in at 9, I get off at 6, and I get an hour off. And an entrepreneurial spirit is you work till the job's done, and you get things done, but the difference is you're working for yourself. So you have a different attitude. And I'm not against people that do that. And I understand organizations that you work for, you have to do that.
Sure. But yeah,
I think it's somebody willing to, you know, go that extra mile or do those extra things maybe. And you see it even when they're a staff pharmacist, you know, those skills come out. Yep.
So you basically use a staff pharmacist as an interview for somebody you might want to open a store with.
Yeah. And I think that's why I said you got to work together. You know what, Josh, you may think, you know, Bill, your teeth are crooked. I can't own a store with you. Or, you know, whatever those reasons. And the other thing that's critical is it's a family decision.
Okay.
It's not an individual decision. If your family is not involved, if your spouse or significant other is not a part of that decision, then you will not be successful, because happy wife, happy life is true.
Right.
I think I love the story about Darren. You know, is they had a store that they thought they were going to buy in their hometown, and we had this opportunity in Winfield, and he was so excited about doing that, and his mom was, I do think she was unhappy with me, but I think she's giving me now.
I think you're on speaking terms now. I'm sure.
Yeah, I think so.
So, you know, one of the things that we face as well on the Red Tail Pioneer side is you've got multiple partners that you don't own all of, right? So you've got to convince them that the way that the organization's going to go, they want to go to. So how do you control, or not really control, how do you convince 21 other people to march with you?
You know, part of it
and
is
how can I do
you
that
have
too?
Mutual respect to them. You know, I remember, and I'm not as good, my father, who started this before me, every Friday would call every partner. Hmm. Well, I got 21 partners. I can't do that every Friday, but I try to communicate on a regular basis. I think there's a trust factor there, and you got to make sure that you don't betray that trust and make sure you're transparent with them about what we're doing. And, you know, hopefully what we can do is show them a positive effect of the bottom line. And if you can show the positive effect of the bottom line, it's easier to get people to buy in.
For sure. Right. Start seeing results, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitively one of the things that we're trying to do. And, you know, your comment about, are you a chain, are you independent, what do you need me to be, is very much aligned with what we're trying to do, right? How do you push the profession of pharmacy forward but still maintain 6,000 independent people operating completely independently?
Right.
Right? Like, it's a, how do we march together in the same direction, but still let you keep all of the cool things that make you independent and special? Nobody wants, like, I worked for Walgreens. I don't want to do it again. I know most of the people who own a pharmacy at some point worked in a chain.
Mm-hmm.
They're independent for a reason, but there are certain things we have to do together, right?
And I understand the frustration. I mean, think about this. We have 30 locations. All of our locations are always on the same software platform. So we're all on Pioneer. Every one of our stores uses it a little different. We don't have some policy and procedure that says this is how you're going to do it. We're allowing them to within limits, figure out how they're going to do it their way. And it's fascinating to watch if you go to one of those stores to how different they are, but yet the same bones are there. But it's just how they're using it, and it's pretty neat. And you know, one of our challenges with Pioneer, I'm always proud of what we did with Pioneer. I think we converted 28 stores at the time.
It's been
about 3 years ago, in 6 weeks. We've been doing conversions since 1984 from software to new software, and it was by far the smoothest data conversion that we'd ever had. And part of that was the buy-in from staff and Pioneer understanding how important that was, because learning new software and how it works, it takes some time. Yeah. And but I always remember that's an example of buy-in from our partners and a consensus that, hey, we need to go to Pioneer, we think, because they're innovative, they're doing these things, and they're doing the things that we need to be getting ready for or do. And you know, so that's an example where we just put it out there, and that's what the group wanted to do. And so it's been a good thing. So
what I really want for Sweetgrass Pharmacy for both locations is to be the health center, the health hub for everybody, right? So I'm really not focused on just geriatrics, and I'm not really focused just on pediatrics. I'm not just focused on antibiotics. I'm not just focused on compounding. We do a little bit of everything. So everything from long-term care, assisted living group homes, independent living, to regular retail, to immigration vaccine clinics that we run here for people that are need all of their, you know, all their vaccines for their immigration requirements, to our compounding, sterile and non-sterile. So being able to layer all of those things on top of one another allows patients to be able to come to either one of my pharmacies and get everything that they need, right? Whether it's a consult, whether it's a vaccine, whether it's a sterile injectable, sterile eye drop, or an amoxicillin, right? So just kind of being a resource for that. And that, you know, I find that being able to do it all really allows for deeper relationships with my patients. So if I can help you like 360 with your medications, then I can develop a better relationship with you.
Nice. Yeah. And that extends to the front end as well. You guys have the great kind of traditional gift areas up front and the retail pharmacies that, you know, I think is really cool in small towns, especially where you do have that, you know, something more than just medications, you know, the kind of disarming, you know, warm front end is really nice. The mud pie gifts and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I love is when a patient, my favorite thing is to see a patient come in, let's say a lady my age, and she's picking up compliance packaging for both of her parents. She's picking up her hormone replacement and she's picking up her dog's medicine, right? So for to be able to take care of all of that, again, just, you know, provides that confidence in that patient that she has with us. It just really ensues that relationship.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's definitely the entire spectrum. You touched on the veterinary medication, and I always think that's such a great way to connect with your patients because, you know, I took my cat in this week because I was concerned that she was kind of just didn't seem happy. She was, you know, not getting along with the other. They're so complex, you know. So having that element of your family cared for, I think, is really great if you can get that at the same spot. So how did that come about? And do you have like a specific kind of niche that you focus on in that area? Or tell me a little bit about that.
It came about because so many veterinarians need things compounded, right? So just like if you go to a shoe store, if you only had one size of a shoe, it wouldn't work for you. If we only have one size of a tablet or just a couple, it's not going to work for every size animal. And when you think of the gamut of sizes for a dog, especially you might have a 3-pounder or you might have a 100-pound dog. So we really have to be very specific on what we make for them. And so when I opened initially, vets came to me and said, can you make this? Can you do this? Can you help with this? And that was super exciting for me. I'm a dog lover. I have a big, goofy golden retriever at home. And so I'm passionate about animals. And it's been a great little niche market for us. Here in our area, we have veterinarians that specialize in dermatology or ophthalmology, like very, very, very specialized cardiology veterinarians. And they need specialized things and they need it quickly. And they might not want to order it from a pharmacy that's halfway across the country. So it's helpful that they can get it same day here with us. And they know they're getting quality from, you know, an approved and an accredited pharmacy.
In partnership with the College of Pharmacy, School of Pharmacy at Virginia Commonwealth University, we've developed a 15-hour compounding curriculum. It is entry-level foundation for new technicians, new pharmacists, and it's everything you need to know about the ethical, legal, and regulatory framework of compounding. It's one thing to know how to compound a preparation.
Sure.
It's another thing to know about the compliance and the laws and why you do what you do. And so that's what this course is about. You can find information
on our website. The other trend, you mentioned trends. The other thing that I'm seeing is some consolidation of compounding pharmacies. There are private equity companies that are getting into the business of compounding pharmacies. Some of those are in conjunction with telehealth platforms.
Yeah.
We have a company like APC Pharmacy Facility Member Revelation Pharma that is buying up. It's like a holding company for pharmacies, and Revelation is allowing those pharmacies to retain their identity in the community as, you know, we're this kind of pharmacy.
Sure.
But they're also providing some standardization of processes and compliance, et cetera. And so they've grown from a couple of three pharmacies 2 years ago to, I think it's 13 or 14 pharmacies. We're seeing Belmar, which has purchased Women's International and some other pharmacies.
Yeah.
We've seen private equity, Empower out of Houston, has had an infusion of cash from private equity, and they're able to build a beautiful state-of-the-art facility there that's working with a lot of telehealth platforms, et cetera. So that's something that I'm seeing as well.
That's true. I didn't even think about them being in the segment we've been talking about as like your, I'll just say your larger scale, the stuff you see on commercials and TVs and things like that around segments around like hair growth and ED, and even now I think they're wading into GLP-1s and things like that.
GLP-1s, yeah, so, absolutely.
Totally even forgot that they're even part of this segment as well when it comes to compounding, because some of that stuff they're just manufacturing or contracting out to manufacture, I think, from what I understand, some of their own compounded formulas for some of that stuff, especially with treating hair and things like that. For that. So yeah, that makes total sense.
And I will tell you, I'll just name names. I mean, we were delighted last year that Hims and Hers, which you see commercials on television, they are APC members. On the veterinary side, we hadn't talked veterinary, but
that's a whole other animal. Pun intended.
Yeah, Chewy is a member of APC. So I think it's gratifying that they are seeing value in belonging to our trade association. They perceive that we are representing their interests, and I hope to heck we are.
Well, good stuff. The other thing I'll say for current members, I'm sure some of those are listening today. You guys have a I think something that's called APC Fellows that I wanted to plug for you, which is really, I don't know if is that voting or that submitting all wrapped up done? Is it done yet or not?
Well, we do it annually.
Okay.
The applications will begin, will be open in March for the 2024 class of fellows. And then they will be installed at our Compounders on Capitol Hill event this September in Washington, D.C. And it's a fellows program like NCPA and APHA and other groups have. But it really signifies a high commitment to professionalism and ethics. And
service to the industry.
We're proud of our fellows, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's going on. You could submit people for that too, and pharmacy techs too, from what I understand.
Absolutely, yeah. And well, year before last was the first year that pharmacy technicians, compounding pharmacy technicians, could be installed, and we did install several of them. It's a good program for technicians.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate and say I'm an independent pharmacist, and why should I, you know, look for a solution that I have to pay for? I can price drugs myself. And we've already talked about a lot of the challenges and problems with that, you know, coming up with your own pricing regimen. But, you know, what does that cost look like? How is that passed to the pharmacy? And then after those costs are incurred, you know, are the pharmacies seeing that benefit outside of that cost to the program?
I'll take that one first, and then, you know, Joey can obviously speak to his own personal experience, but part of the impact review that we do with customers is look at that. Are you maintaining profit in the program? So we do, you know, look at your price compared to previous year. We look at fees, but when we're evaluating your opportunity in the program, the first thing we do is look at, hey, does this make sense? You know, are you already okay at what you're pricing? is there a variant to our algorithms that after fees is going to make sense? And the fees are normally a small portion of that overall revenue uplift that a pharmacy is going to experience. And like we've talked about, there are efficiencies there where you're getting the revenue uplift in cash. You don't have to worry about it. And then you can look for other areas of revenue opportunity while that is getting you, you know, like Joey said, you're 5 to 10%. Where else can I start building my business in the midst of all of this reimbursement chaos, right?
If you want to manage it yourself, it's going to take time away from you building your business in other places. Like we wouldn't have, you know, whatever time it takes, that's time that now I can devote to getting this clinic up and running and being successful. So it's, can do you think you're going to make money by managing a cash pricing program? That's the question you have to ask yourself as a business owner. And for me, like for me, it's that you can't even measure it though, right? If unless you have something to compare it to. So again, I don't know if you've ever had a situation where you've had a pharmacy sign up and they actually collect less revenue. Maybe you've had that, but my guess would be that over time, they will see an increase in revenue from gained business rather than it be a detriment if that hypothetical situation even exists.
Yeah, and like I mentioned, you know, we do our homework up front, you know, The pharmacies that we would approach, you know, we know there's opportunity there. And then ones that approach us, we do our due diligence. You know, if we don't think this program's a good fit for your pharmacy, we're going to tell you, hey, you're doing a great job pricing in your market. Keep doing what you're doing. You know, unless you want to take that off your plate. We had one group, there are a little over 20 pharmacies. He was very close to our price, you know, less than 5%. He said, I want to do this because I don't want to manage this pricing anymore. And I want my price to be standardized across my chain. I don't want anybody doing anything different. And they had a new pharmacy open up within their chain. He was not confident in the cash pricing that had been set up there. They were already on Pioneer. He turned the bin on himself and asked me for, you know, permission later. He said, I hope you don't mind. I bought this new pharmacy and we wanted to get them on the program. What do I need to do to officially sign them up? Because this was just an easy solution for me to know that on day one, I'm confident in their cash pricing program.
Yeah.
Thank you for watching the Catalyst Pharmacy Podcast.
If you enjoyed today's episode, please like, subscribe, and follow us wherever you get your podcast.
Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts to help us reach more pharmacy professionals like you.